Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
Welcome to Tell Me Everything. For the next 3 hours, we're coming at you. We got a packed show. A lot going on. A lot happened today. I hope you're well. I hope you're safe. I hope if you're going into any crowded indoor places, you're at least considering bringing a mask with you. And I hope you're staying sane at a time when the world seems devoted to making us feel crazy. Chris Hauseltz, our executive producer, running this thing out of South Carolina. Thea Harper, our associate producer, keeps this train on the tracks in Brooklyn. I come to you from Manhattan. Great show tonight. Bob Seska will be with us very shortly. Also, Dr. Tracy Pearson will be here to talk about the new regime for the Democrats in the House. I'm totally out of breath. I was moving furniture literally like 5 minutes ago because we're still broadcasting from home. Hopefully not forever. So we have a lot to get to tonight, and I'm glad you're here. I want to begin by talking about Christine McVie and other good things that make life better. I don't know if you noticed, it was a good day today. A lot of good news today out there. It's been a big week so far for LGBTQ Americans. First, the marriage bill. Very exciting. The House is going to take up the Senate-passed version of the law that will protect same-sex marriage rights and interracial marriage rights. This is the one that Mitch McConnell voted against, even though he's in an interracial marriage, even though Donald Trump can't stop applying racist nicknames to Mitch McConnell's wife, who was in his cabinet, but Donald Trump's a racist douchebag, so that's what's going to happen. But this now, it's going to pass. It's amazing. Clarence Thomas more or less dared Congress to do something to protect taxpaying lesbian and gay married couples, and by God, Congress did it. 13 Republican senators came over and helped, and congratulations, Chuck Schumer. You know how significant this is? That, like, we saw Pat Leahy and Patty Murray both vote to protect marriage equality last night. Remember 26 years ago, under the Defense of Marriage Act, they both voted to define marriage as between one man and one woman. In fact, we talk a lot about Bill Clinton and DOMA, and it's got a very ugly history. The argument can be made that Bill Clinton, by doing that, got himself reelected and kept Bob Dole from becoming president, but it still doesn't look good in history. 32 out of 47 Democrats in the Senate in 1996 voted to support the Defense of Marriage Act. 32 out of 47. This week, 49 out of 50 voted for the Respective Marriage Act. And the only one who didn't vote for it was Raphael Warnock, because he's busy this week. I mean, four Democrats have been in the Senate long enough to vote both times. Dianne Feinstein and Ron Wyden both times voted in defense of same-sex marriage. So that's really good. But even better, a story that's not getting as much news is the FDA is going to change their blood donation policies. Almost 40 years after the gay population was so unfairly maligned by the AIDS crisis and the bisexual male population as well. Now, if gay or bi men are in monogamous relationships, the FDA will let them donate blood. For the last 7 years, if you were gay or bi as a man, you had to be sexually abstinent before you could donate blood. And again, before 2015, gay and bisexual men were completely barred from doing it. But the FDA had a study earlier this year that examined the efficacy of using an individualized risk assessment before allowing a blood donation, which is what Canada does, and it works just fine. This is a real victory for advocates who've long pushed for the change. Again, it only affects gay and bisexual men who are sexually active, who would like to give blood, but still, it's progress and it's good. And of course, the real progress today, we saw it. Hakeem Jeffries became the first black leader of a party in Congress today when he was elected by his colleagues to serve as the minority leader in the House. It's pretty amazing. No drama. I mean, no drama. Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer are making way for a new generation. And the trio of Hakeem Jeffries, Catherine Clark, and Pete Aguilar were completely unopposed. They easily secured their roles as the top three Democrats in the House in the votes this morning. Here's Senator Chuck Schumer commenting on the ascension of Hakeem Jeffries to House Democratic leadership.
Hakeem Jeffries' elevation as House Democratic leader is a turning point in the history of the United States Congress. Never before has an African-American leader or any leader of color held the top position for either party in either chamber. With yesterday's vote on respect for marriage and today's vote for House Democratic leader, our representative democracy continues to march forward towards its promise of equality and full representation for all Americans.
It's so exciting. Since 1965, there's only been 9 African-American elected members of Congress from the Republican Party at all. 0 have chaired a committee. 1 chaired a subcommittee. 1's in party leadership. But that's in the last 55 years for the GOP. Here's Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Leader Jeffries, taking a few moments to rub salt of party unity into Kevin McCarthy's open wounds of GOP disarray.
House Democratic Caucus remains unified and focused in our efforts to fight for lower costs, for better paying jobs, for safer communities, to put people over politics. Those are our values that will drive us forward. Republicans are going to have to work out whatever mess and chaos is going on the other side of the aisle. That's not for us to get involved in at this point in time.
Republicans are also going to have to work out how they're going to smear Hakeem Jeffries. It's not going to be easy. I wonder how. Expect them to start trying very, very soon. It's going to be beautiful. And then there'll be Kevin McCarthy flailing about, lying for Donald Trump and trying to please everybody, which means nobody in his party will be respecting him. One more bit of good news, a few more bits. Raphael Warnock, you know, I admire the senator. I admire that he's tried to be above the fray. When Herschel goes low, he goes high. He hasn't talked about how Herschel paid for these two women to get abortions. He hasn't talked about all these children that Herschel never told anyone about, that Herschel pulled a gun on his ex-wife's head. Well, no more. Reverend Warnock has taken off the gloves. He tweeted last night, Herschel Walker lies about the basic facts of his life. And he listed Herschel's lies. He was a policeman. He was an FBI agent. He was a University of Georgia graduate. Oh, my God, it's going to be a really interesting week until this runoff happens. Also, the European Union is now threatening Elon Musk with a full Twitter ban in all of Europe if he goes ahead and lets all the liars and the racists and the anti-Semites back onto Twitter. I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm sure Elon's sick, but the racists and anti-Semites have $8, and I need them all to give me $8. So with all that in mind, I wanted to have some happy news, because today was a sad one. Today's the day that we've learned that we've lost Fleetwood Mac's singer, songwriter, and keyboardist, Christine McVie, who wrote some of the band's most memorable songs. She died in the hospital today following a short illness. She was 79 years old. I don't usually use the top of the show for obituaries, especially for artists, but you know, if this woman had been a solo artist, I'm convinced that everybody would have known her name. I mean, she joined the band in 1970. She released 3 very good solo albums. If you listen to Fleetwood Mac's Greatest Hits album from 1988, 8 of the songs were written by Christine. She was trained as a classical pianist as a kid until like 15 years old. And then one day her brother came home with a Fats Domino songbook and she got heavily into rock and roll. She recorded her solo album, Christine Perfect, because that's her real name. Her actual real name is Christine Perfect. We're going to play one of her tunes from her early career later on tonight. And then, of course, she went on to join the band Chicken Shack and had a hit with the song I'd Rather Go Blind, which we'll play tonight as well. She was on lead vocals there. She won a Melody Maker Award for Best Female Vocalist in 1969 and 1970. She was very well known in the UK before she married the bass player of another band. She married John McVie of Fleetwood Mac, and they had her play piano as a session musician for Fleetwood Mac when it was still the Peter Green band for the album Mr. Wonderful. And she did backup vocals, played piano, but she joined the band full-time in 1970 after marrying John. And in 74, she agreed to move with the rest of Fleetwood Mac to the U.S. And that, of course, changed the band and changed music, because within a year, Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham joined it, and suddenly it was a whole new group. In 1965, they released the album Fleetwood Mac, which had the songs Over My Head and Say You Love Me. And then she began an affair with the band's lighting director. When you know that song, You Make Loving Fun? Big, big top 10 hit on the Rumors album. That wasn't written for her husband. That was actually written for the band's lighting director on the road. She also wrote Don't Stop, which was their biggest hit, her biggest hit, number three. And of course, Rumors also brought us the song Songbird, which she played as the encore of many, many Fleetwood Mac shows. If you've seen the full lineup of Fleetwood Mac, you've probably seen Christine McVie close one of those shows with Songbird. The rest is history. The McVies divorced, and then they put out the double album Tusk. And even though they were divorced, they stayed together and had many more hits. They got back together in the 80s to record the album Mirage in France, and that brought them back to the top of the charts again. That had the song Hold Me, which she had written, and that song was about her three-year relationship with Beach Boys drummer Dennis Wilson. Huge hit. And she took the greatest joys and the greatest sorrows of her love life and turned them into beautiful music. She then stopped. She left the band and said she was retiring from touring. And Stevie Nicks left too, but Christine McVie stayed a member of the band, like Brian Wilson with the Beach Boys. She wrote songs for them. She recorded with them, but she wouldn't go on tour with them. They had their box set in 1992, 25 Years the Chain. They had this album in 1995 called Time. So she was still in the band, but she just wasn't part of the touring experience. And then in the mid-90s, John McVie and Mick Fleetwood and Lindsey Buckingham got together for a solo project of Lindsey's, and they asked her to sing and play. She did it. She had so much fun. They got Stevie Nicks to join them. And that led to The Dance, the album that was big back when Bill Clinton was in office. After that, you know, she got inducted into the Hall of Fame. She got the Brit Award for Outstanding Contribution to Music. And then after almost 30 years with Fleetwood Mac, Christine McVie decided to leave. And she lived in pretty much a retirement state of life for about 15 years. She went to see the band do their last UK performance on the Say You Will tour in 2003 in the UK. She wouldn't join them on stage. She put out another solo record in 2004. And then about 9 years later, she came on stage with Fleetwood Mac at the O2 Arena in London, and then joined them on their On With The Show tour in 2014. And she kept on doing it. And she played with the original lineup once again. And then 5 years ago, she put an album with Lindsey Buckingham, just the two of them, called Lindsey Buckingham, Christine McVie. It wasn't a huge hit, but it's really terrific. And it sounds like the lost Fleetwood Mac record. They did a 38-day tour together. She had a career that was just so much about pop hits with a very understated, mellow voice. She didn't have a big, brassy hit the back of the rafter. She sang delicately, she sang gently and from the heart. And it's why she may have been the least flashy songwriter to ever have this many hits. She sang on the Beach Boys' 1979 album, L.A. She sang with Christopher Cross on the Never Stop Believing song. She was supposed to be recording a new solo album. And they announced about 9 years ago she was finally going to have one. They never released it. I think, though, what I'm most grateful for with Christine McVie, what I'm most grateful for with Fleetwood Mac, is how much their music meant to Americans after 12 years of Reagan-Bush trickle-down. You know, people don't remember how awful it was when George H.W. Bush was president. Liberals weren't really crazy about Bill Clinton, but it was just such a feeling in this country 30 years ago of optimism. We forget Bill Clinton was elected 30 years ago this month, and it was a real low point. I mean, the economy was in recession. We'd had this stupid war to help reinstate the dictator of Kuwait. And the band Fleetwood Mac wasn't doing that well either. I mean, in the beginning of the 90s, they were like on a nostalgia bill with REO Speedwagon and Pat Benatar. Only Mick Fleetwood and John McVie were left in the band from the Rumors lineup. But when Bill Clinton was elected president, he chose Don't Stop to be his overriding campaign message. And the song got bigger and bigger, and so big that when he was inaugurated into the White House as the 42nd president, the group came out of retirement to perform that track, and it brought them back on the road again and brought the album The Dance, which is just terrific. That show was the first time the Rumors era version of the band played together in over 6 years. So I thank you, Christine McVie, for all the sublime vocals, for your beautiful keyboard playing, which isn't talked about enough in these obituaries. Thank you for your incredible songwriting. Just, I mean, great, great pop music. And thank you for giving a kid like me a lot of hope when the Bill Clinton campaign made Democrats and liberals think that maybe, just maybe, Reaganism wasn't going to be the way of America forever. 79 years old. God bless Christine McVie. Listen to some of her music. Listen to some of the solo stuff as well. We were playing the video earlier for Love Will Show Us How, which is a terrible music video about Christine McVie being forced to do a terrible music video. And it's very tacky. It's all the worst of 90s comedy. But she's so graceful. She's so above it. And she sings this song that's largely forgotten, but could have been a hit for Fleetwood Mac in the 80s. Do yourself a favor and just play her stuff and appreciate the vocals, the songwriting, and all the joy that great artists can bring us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. I sent Chris Hauselt a long list of music to play for tonight's playlist, and then we got the sad news about Christine McVie. It's going to be a very different playlist than we had planned on this evening. I'm so glad to welcome Bob Seska back to the show. He is the host of The Bob Seska Show, one of the best podcasts about music and politics you will ever hope to hear. Maybe you came to Bob through the Stephanie Miller appearances. Maybe you came to Bob through his columns in Salon and the Daily Banter. We are thrilled we found a way to sucker him to join us every Wednesday night on the show. Mr. Seska, welcome back.
I'm so sad about Christine McVie. I really haven't had a chance to fully digest. I've been so busy today. I haven't had a chance to sit down and fully digest it. If you get a chance, listen to Songbird on Songbird. Rumors, yeah. Which is one of her tracks. And try not to get choked up when you listen. What an incredible loss. What an amazing talent. So many wonderful songs. And that collaboration between her and Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks and Mick Fleetwood and her husband John McVie. Suffice to say, I'm a big fan of Fleetwood Mac, John, and I'm just now really starting to absorb this news. It's so tragic.
For me, you know, I grew up, I was never that big a fan. I mean, I always liked them, but like, I never collected their albums as a young person because their songs were always on the radio. You know, there's some artists that are so ubiquitous in the culture, you're like, I don't need to own that record. It's always, just go anywhere, you'll hear Fleetwood Mac songs. Go to a bar, go to a store, get in a taxi, you'll always hear their stuff. And so I will admit, I've always taken the band a bit for granted. I've always liked them. I've never disliked them. I love their 80s stuff. I love the stuff in the 90s. Silver Springs is a great song. But I'll tell you, today I first got the news and I was like, oh, that's sad. I liked her. I remember her solo stuff. And as the day went on, Bob, I kept
reading more about her and realizing, oh, I didn't know she wrote that. I didn't know she wrote that. And I'd like look up, wait, what, she wrote this Fleetwood Mac song? Which one is that? And I'd play it. I'm like, oh my God, I grew up hearing this song. So many Fleetwood Mac songs I'm now realizing, because I never got to be a geek of the band. I just never knew the titles, but I can sing along with them all. And this woman's productivity is astonishing. She was allowed to take all the 15-year breaks from touring she wanted because she just, I mean, she just pushed these hits out. The songwriting caliber is incredible.
And how difficult that must have been. I mean, she had a fear of flying, which is one of the reasons why she didn't tour quite often.
That's
and that really prevented her from doing everything that the rest of the band was doing. So in that sense, I wonder if she felt in some way an outsider, you know, where she couldn't join in. But then again, you know, it was Fleetwood Mac, and they were always butting heads in some way. They were either having sex with each other, or they were fighting with each other, or doing both at the same time. So that was kind of the Fleetwood Mac legacy.
Well, I mean, Stevie and Buckingham broke up, and Christine and John broke up, and they still were able to get back together and tour again because, you know, it was just all about the music. And that 1990s reunion tour, it was great.
Yeah,
they were great.
Yeah. Yeah.
They sounded terrific.
Yeah, they didn't skip a beat. If you got a chance, again, another thing to listen to and try not to choke up while you're listening to it is The Dance, which is the live album that accompanied
really
that
good.
Particular tour. Yeah, just a staggeringly amazing music, one of a kind band. And just because they did pop songs doesn't mean they're not a serious band. I mean, musically speaking, there's so much integrity in Fleetwood Mac music.
Yeah.
You know, from Lindsey Buckingham on down, the playing is complex. The harmonies are bar none some of the greatest in rock music. So, yeah, what a tragic, tragic loss.
Bob, I want to move on and ask how your Thanksgiving was. I hope you had a nice one.
Yeah, just about on average. It was nice. Yeah, had a good time.
Did you have a problem with Nazis coming over to your Thanksgiving and you just didn't know they were Nazis before you let them into the house and sat down with them and talked about what a great time you had? That happens to me all the time, Bob.
I did a Twitter poll to see whether or not I should allow the Nazis.
It's the most scientific way to find information. I'm glad.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Totally not shoddy. Totally not gamed by bots and trolls.
Exactly.
And so, legitimately speaking, I said, you know, I just announced Vox Populi, Vox Dei. Here we are. Come on in, Nazis. Yeah, he's really emptying Blackgate Prison now, isn't he? He's doing Bane from the end of The Dark Knight Rises.
He blew up Arkham Asylum, and they're letting him all back in now. Well, but in fairness, Bob, in fairness, there's a lot of anti-Semites and a lot of racists and a lot of people willing to lie about a plague who have $8. And we are talking about a billionaire right. with a cup in his hand, right?
Yeah, yeah. And what is that? What's the conversion rate between $8 US and whatever Bitcoin means? I don't know, because I think a lot of that money is coming from Bitcoin accounts. And I have no blessed idea how any of that works. It's some sort of, it's like monopoly money, right? Is that what that is? It's like fake internet monopoly money.
Yeah.
Is that pretty close?
Completely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations. Yeah. You can now do a commercial with Matt Damon to sell people nothing.
Yeah, I really sound like a senior citizen when it comes to that. I really, really do. But, you know,
can I tell you? Oh, go ahead, please.
Well, no, I was just going to say it's Elon Musk's universe now on Twitter. And so we're all, you know, as long as we're there, it's his insane, erratic rules that we have to
deal
with.
Like little Billy Mummy in the Twilight Zone. I'm going to turn you into a Jack in the Box because I can do that. It's hideous.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob, I'm cultivating a new unhinged conspiracy theory every week. That's just, you know, how I'm staying sane these days. It's like crochet for me. Last week, my unhinged conspiracy theory was that Donald Trump, who's not really running for president. There's no campaign manager. There's no communications director. It's just squeezing more nickels out of the rubes. But last week, my theory was that Trump's only doing this to eventually get enough delegates that he can agree to drop out in exchange for a pardon from President DeSantis. That was what was keeping me up all week last week.
Yeah. Valid.
This week, what's keeping me awake? Who staked Elon Musk $44 billion? And could a large chunk of that money come from foreign actors who have a vested interest in destabilizing American democracy by driving a stake through the heart of the public electronic square? I'm now like, there's no way this ends well for Elon. There's no way he's going to get $8 out of enough racists to make back $44 billion. He tried to back out and the judge forced him in. Bob, It's so inept. It's so poorly done. I've lost 21,000 followers since this happened. People are leaving the site. What other endgame could there be?
Wait, you lost 21,000 followers?
Since he carried that sink into the lobby, I've lost 21,000 followers. That's it, people leaving the site.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? First, you're in very good company because there was a Washington Post piece this week that analyzed Democratic and Republican lawmakers how many followers they lost or gained. Shocking that Democrats lost hundreds of thousands.
Bernie Sanders, yeah. Barack Obama, hundreds of thousands.
Mm-hmm. Hakeem Jeffries and Elizabeth Warren. But Marjorie Taylor Greene gained hundreds of thousands of followers. Jim Jordan gained hundreds of thousands of followers. Basically, Republican leadership did quite well. Ted Cruz and others gained all kinds of followers while Democrats are losing followers. And I get the sense that, well, first of all, it's entirely possible that Elon Musk just loves to shake up the ant farm to see all the ants freak out. That's still kind of the Occam's razor explanation for all of this, but I don't buy it. I think this is a deliberate move to drive away what he referred to as judgy hall monitors, which I think include obviously traditional journalists, reporters, publications that they write for, right, as well as all of us who rely on those institutions for valid information.
Okay.
And so I think the mission, because he's said it, may be just that, to clear away all of the things that he doesn't like, all the people that he doesn't like, or that his bro libertarian sort of neo-fascist people love.
Right. I get that.
Yeah.
But I mean, so, on the surface, that certainly seems what he's doing on the surface. But that's spending $44 billion of borrowed money to just wag your dick around. I mean, I don't really see a methodology behind it.
Yeah. And where this is going is to clear the way for all of these people to take over this massive communications platform. And that's the key. If you drive away all the normals, whatever is left basically has control over the information dissemination on Twitter. And that information, calling it information is a stretch. We're talking about making Twitter a platform for disinformation, mm-hmm, to make that the conveyance for all of that. And just in time for the 2024 presidential campaign, which, by the way, is underway and coincidentally got underway right around day one of Elon Musk's tin pot dictatorship at Twitter. Yeah. So these things, I mean, maybe that timing was a little bit coincidental, but this is the goal of driving normals off of Twitter, which is happening in droves, as we've seen with the numbers. That is, I think, in concurrence with the idea of getting a different kind of message out on Twitter for 2023 and 2024.
I get it. I'm following. But who does getting the normals off of Twitter benefit? How does turning Twitter into Truth Social and to yet another echo chamber with fewer people on it? How does that help Bratty McApartheid face get his $44 billion he owes?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's a good question. I think one person you can look at is, the guy who has a $1.9 billion stake in this Elon Musk investment, and that is Prince Awaleed of Saudi Arabia.
That's what Saudi I'm talking
Arabia
about.
Has got a lot of money pumped into. And what did we hear recently, John, in the past couple of weeks? Donald Trump doing another one of his licensing deals for a resort property in Oman, I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so Donald Trump's getting a lot of money from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has invested a ton of money into Jared Kushner. And here we see it around the same time Donald Trump announces his next campaign for president. Plus, Elon Musk has got this Saudi money that he's using in the entire pool, which also includes, a bank investments and Elon Musk's own money. And then you start to hear about Elon Musk's political leanings and what he wants to do with legitimate journalism and replace that with citizen journalism, which to me, when I hear the title citizen journalism, I think, oh, yeah, like citizen surgeons.
Yeah, that's what we need. It's more citizen airline pilots. Exactly right. Yeah. We need that kind of democracy, don't we?
Right, right.
But again, I get it. But how does he make money off of this? It just seems like making a smaller tent only hurts his bottom line.
Yeah, and that's what's so confusing about it, because everything he's doing is driving away legitimate advertisers. I think he was able to claw back Tim Cook this afternoon and get Tim Cook to keep Twitter on its app store, on the Apple app store. But that he didn't say anything about keeping Apple as a advertising partner, because Apple was spending, I think, $50 million a quarter on advertising on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And if that goes away, that's going to damage Elon Musk. But nothing that Musk is doing right now is attracting any advertisers. In fact, it's driving advertisers away, driving people to boycott those advertisers, to block yes. them when they see them come up in their feed. And so it doesn't make any sense. It's like Elon Musk is just tripping over his shoelaces into a pile of rakes and then falling backwards into a propeller. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And that's what's so confounding. And that's what's so difficult about seeing through that noise to what may be really going on.
I mean, this could just be a benevolent God showing us again that putting our faith in billionaires might not be the best way to run a society. Maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, as much as I enjoy watching this, you know, petulant knob flail about and make a damn fool of himself, I don't know. And hey, at least someone's looking out for the racists and the anti-Semites, right? At least finally they're getting a place at the table.
Oh,
and I mentioned racists and anti-Semites because, Bob, here's my little joke. You know, Kanye brought Milo Yiannopoulos with him and Nick Fuentes to the the Nazi Thanksgiving dinner. So the joke is, what if an anti-Semite, a white supremacist, and a sex offender head into Mar-a-Lago? And then Trump says, oh, I'm all alone here. Kanye, bring friends. I'm glad the media is making such a thing out of this story, because I think every Republican should have to come down with an opinion on not Nick Fuentes, on Donald Trump associating with Nick Fuentes. I'm so sick of seeing these Republicans condemning Fuentes, but not condemning Cuomo for Caligula for welcoming in on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, yeah. And I want to.
No one condemning. And by the way, no one condemning Milo, who literally calls for children to be sleeping with men. Literally.
Oh, yeah.
And no one had a peep about that.
Right. And I think what we get to is a stage where we start to think, well, you know, that's just baseline. That's baseline Milo. That's baseline Trump. So we're not even going to worry about that. I mean, Trump could get onto Truth Social or whatever it's called and just start blurting the N-word. And I think a lot of people would go, it's Trump being Trump. Boys will be boys. Milo will be Milo. Nick Fuentes will be Nick Fuentes. Oh, that's just what they do. And we can't take that for granted, especially someone like Nick Fuentes. This is a good example of something that I've been talking about for quite some time now, about how a lot of times, especially in the social media age, evil thrives in darkness. Here's a great example. Nick Fuentes. No one on the left has been talking about Nick Fuentes, and rightfully so. I think he seems like a performance artist. He seems like he's doing a bit from like, you know what he seems like? He seems like the sort of evangelical villain from a 1990s disaster movie. Like he would be the guy who would have a megaphone standing on the hood of a van yelling at the protagonist about how they're sinning against God or whatever. And the thing with Nick Fuentes is Nick Fuentes rose to this status without liberals paying a goddamn bit of attention to him. And so the lesson there is choose to ignore these people, they will still thrive. Not paying attention to them will not make them go away. Plugging your ears and saying la la la, not listening, will not make them disappear. In fact, most of the time they will gain power. And here's just another example. Sorry about the tangent, but if suddenly the Republicans decided to stop paying attention to Hunter Biden, Hillary Clinton, and Black Lives Matter, would that be good news or bad news for Democrats? I think that would be wonderful news for Democrats, but you know, that's just me. So
you're right.
You know, you flip
how would
that
they raise
over.
Funds? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If we stopped paying attention to some of the villains on the Republican side, would that be good news or bad news for Republicans?
But,
I think it would be great news for Republicans.
In a ratings based news media culture, that's never going to happen. And the fact is, a lot of really nice people were able to live comfortably not knowing who what we call the fuck a Nick Fuentes was. Now they do know. And I can guarantee the media is going to make this guy. If you haven't heard of Nick Fuentes by now, our media will make him so much more famous by Christmas because the media needs a villain. So yeah. While I still have you, let me just twist it around and ask you one last thing, Bob, because I'm seeing a lot of liberal, smart people really excited about Jack Smith. Really thinking this is it. Like, finally, now, forget those other times, Trump, over the last 6 years. Now you're going to pay.
Yeah. I Bob, know.
Do I want to get my heart broken again? I mean, what's your take on it?
I absolutely sympathize with what you're saying, John. I don't necessarily agree. I think in the long run, I think this is a good thing as far as handing down accountability for Donald Trump. But it's one of those things where, again, we didn't know anything about this document situation until very, very recently. We didn't know that there was a grand jury investigating Donald Trump's involvement in January 6th until recently. So it hasn't ultimately been that long. And we've been surprised by some of these developments, too. And I think with Jack Smith, what that indicates is an increased likelihood that Donald Trump will be indicted. Not less likely, because what Merrick Garland is trying desperately to do is to not appear partisan in this. He's trying so hard to make this as on the level as possible, while at the same time blazing a new trail, establishing a tradition, establishing rules and parameters for how to exactly investigate an ex-president of the opposite party. And he's doing pretty good. I think he's doing a good job.
Bob, we got to go in our final moments. You just had a really hip guest on the Bob Seska Show. Tell us who. Really quick.
Yeah, Amanda Wiss, the great Amanda Wiss. She was famous for Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Better Off Dead. She was the first person Freddy Krueger ever killed in a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. And Silverado. She was Woody's girlfriend on Cheers. And a wonderful, wonderful actress and wonderful person. We had a great time talking about what it's like to be a woman in Hollywood, especially after age 30 and so on. Just a great
I can't interview. Wait to hear this one. I can't wait.
Thank you,
Bob
John.
Seska, thank you for joining us. We will see you next week. Thank you for all you do. Quick break. We'll be right back with your calls at 866-997-4748.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is SiriusXM Progress. We're at 866-997-4748. I'm so pleased to welcome Dr. Tracy Pearson back to the Love Fest. She is, of course, a legal analyst and consultant who you've seen all over on TV and radio and podcasts. She's been quoted by the media and Forbes and Fast Company, the New York Post. You've seen her on everything from Cheddar News to News Nation to the Dr. Phil Show. Dr. Pearson, welcome back.
Gosh, you set up such expectations, and I feel pressure. I feel tremendous pressure.
Well, I'm your hype man. Just call me Flav. That's what I'm here to do.
I love it. I love it.
It's so good to have you here. I hope you and your family had a lovely Thanksgiving.
I did. We did. I hope you did as well. We binged West Wing. If nice. Bradley Whitford is listening right now, I love you. I love Josh Lyman. I'm just going to say that.
How far did you make it? Did you make it all the way up to Jimmy Smits debating Alan Alda?
I made it up to Simon Donovan, who I loved. I love Mark Harmon. If you're listening as well, I love you too. But I listened up to that or watched up to that. And then what happened was I had other things to do and then managed to lose track of that. I can't watch Simon die. I just can't. Mm-hmm. If you haven't, I'm sorry for the spoilers, guys. I mean, you know, it's old, but I just can't.
Richard Schiff and Allison Janney have both done our show and a lot of West Wing actors as well. I'm glad you had a good time. And I like watching The West Wing because I love seeing Alan Alda as Arnold Vilsack, as the evolved, compassionate, informed Republican, because I'm a fan of sci-fi. I want to ask you about your thoughts on the newly elected Democratic leadership. It's been very exciting watching this take form to see Kevin McCarthy with our friends in the GOP kind of just struggling to get enough people to like him enough to give him the job he seems to believe belongs to him. And then the Democrats are in array, unanimous votes. It seemed like it was prepared well in advance. It really seems to be going very well, and almost as if Pelosi and Jeffries have been planning this transition for quite some time.
My recollection is that Nancy Pelosi sort of bargained when she took over the speakership that she would be there 2 years and then she would step aside. And so I believe that there was a plan in place and that they were working to facilitate that plan. And nobody can whip a vote like Nancy Pelosi. And it was a last act of kindness, if you will, to do that for Hakeem Jeffries. I have sort of mixed feelings about all of it because I love Nancy Pelosi. I think she's extraordinary. I can think of a lot of reasons for why she would want to be able to step aside a bit and allow new leadership to take over.
Of course.
But I think that it is a time where you need experience and you need sort of depth of bench to be able to deal with what's coming our way, which is going to provide us with hours of material.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to it. I'm already. I mean, honestly, I hate to tell you how much popcorn I've already bought to watch Kevin McCarthy. I mean, the only thing worse than him not becoming speaker after all these years of scheming, the only thing worse would be him becoming speaker and his life becoming a living hell of accomplishing nothing and being hated by every side of his own caucus.
Yes. Absolutely. And all the former speakers, former Republican speakers are sitting there laughing. They probably bought the other half of the popcorn that was on the shelves.
Well, if I may, fuck Paul Ryan. He doesn't deserve to laugh at anything. So here's the big thing I'm going to be watching for with Hakeem Jeffries, because I do like Representative Jeffries a lot. I've interviewed him before. I thought he was amazing as an impeachment prosecutor. He's, as far as I know, the only member of Congress to quote Biggie Smalls in the well of the House. But he's got a little bit of a problem, as Pelosi did, with the progressive wing of the party. Last year, he was in an interview with the New York Times and he said the extreme left is obsessed with talking trash about mainstream Democrats on Twitter. He launched a PAC last year. He helped launch with other Democrats to help House incumbents to fend off more progressive primary insurgents. Pramila Jayapal is, of course, the chair of the Progressive Caucus. She said she had a really good conversation with him. She's encouraging him to sit down with some of the key members in the left part of the caucus. And apparently he's already met with 3/4 of the squad. Is this the sort of thing that we should keep an eye open for? One of the things I admired most about Pelosi was I think she and AOC worked beautifully together. I think they coordinated every time they disagreed in public, and I think they coordinated every time they agreed in public to keep the caucus together, to keep the resistance vote together. It seems like he's going to have the same challenge.
Nancy Pelosi is a master politician and she knows what she's doing. I agree with you on that. I do think that we are going to see that public disagreement between the Progressive Caucus and leadership. The members of leadership, the new members of leadership, are all members of the Progressive Caucus, but they are rather moderate. They're moderate in comparison to the progressives in that caucus. And there have been issues in the past, but they seem to have garnered that vote. And again, as I said, I think Nancy Pelosi helped whip that together. I think that it also, again, was a product of that agreement that they struck early on. But this, the minority leader, okay, or the speaker, whichever, you know, whatever position they're occupying at the time, mm-hmm. is a lightning rod. That's what they are. And so we are going to see some sparks. There is a differing view between them on many issues. Although yes. I think Representative Jeffries doesn't object overtly to Medicare for All and other such things that progressives support, but he is going to be a lightning rod. But I think that they understand that when the other side's got the gavel, they have to hold it together in order to beat back what's coming their way.
Yeah. Is there a danger in these feelings that, oh, we have to have something new? I know you have rather complex feelings about the concept that new is necessary. It does seem like in this case, they're going to have 2 years to find out how this new machine works. But what are your thoughts about this desire to have a newer, younger leadership? The median age has gone now. It's now down to 51 of the top three Democrats. Median age 51. Before, I believe it was somewhere in the 130s. So what do you think?
I am sensitive to this. You know, I'm hiking up the ladder and of age. And I think that this was the first time where I sort of paused and thought, are we arguing ageism? Is that what we're arguing when we ask for that? And we need to really be careful about that. And I encourage folks to be thinking critically about that. Why do you want new? Is it that it isn't good enough? It isn't doing what you want it to do? It isn't competent enough? Or is it just that you want new and you like the newer voices and the fresher voices and you like their personalities and their Twitter accounts and their Instagram accounts and their TikToks? Is that what you're into? Because I think that we really need to be careful, because with those people who are considered the old guard, comes an incredible amount of institutional knowledge and experience, which you need when you're in a dogfight.
I mean, I've always said, and this is one of my favorite subjects, ageism, because I think it's the one ism that is acceptable to both liberals and conservatives. I mean, come on, we've heard it from the left all over John McCain, who, for all of his many flaws, had more energy than most 40-year-olds I know. Liberals were vicious to Bob Dole. And of course, you know, I'm old enough to remember Johnny Carson making fun of Ronald Reagan being elderly and out of it all the time. I mean, mocking Reagan's decline was comedy fodder for many, many years. In this case, however, it does seem like it came from within. I mean, Clyburn and Hoyer and Pelosi all made this choice together, and none of them fought to keep their seats. It does really seem like they're hitting a reload now.
They are. And again, I think that Nancy Pelosi is a woman of her word and agreed to sit there. If she could hang on, I think she probably would have. But her husband, having been attacked, I think may have figured into some of her decision making as well. If we had held the House in a majority, I think that would have had a major impact. But this was the time to break and step aside. I think that when it comes to the issue of ageism, it's fascinating to me, too, because when you think about Joe Biden and Barack Obama, Joe is the star of those memes and all of those memes that traveled around the Internet. And then all of a sudden he announces to run. And all of a sudden it's like, no, don't do it. We don't want you. And then he gets elected. Everybody's like, And then he's now the president. And it's a problem. You know, he's too old. I just can't take it. It really bothers me. So I urge people to think critically about really what they're commenting on. Is it his age? Is it something else?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think it's his age. But at the same time, as I point out, you know, in 2024, if Joe Biden's the nominee, he'll be 82, but he'll be running against 92-year-old Herbert Hoover economics. So he's still going to be the young guy in the race, as far as I'm concerned. I want to ask you, though, what are your thoughts about what the House is about to look like? I mean, I don't think anyone's going to come up and take the gavel away from Kevin McCarthy. I'm sure right now he is groveling as hard as he can to as many people who hate him as he has to eke this out. I mean, is it really going to be popcorn season? I think... It just seems so doomed to failure. Chris, do we have that clip I sent you earlier? I just want to play a quick one. This was Kevin McCarthy today, or yesterday rather, I'm sorry, outside the White House, where he's trying to defend Donald Trump. Okay, here's Kevin McCarthy. Now, just before you hear this, just know Donald Trump has never condemned Nick Fuentes once. Give a listen.
I'm What about the railroad?
You have yet to condemn the former president for.
No, I don't think. I don't think anybody should be spending any time with Nick Fuentes. He has no place in this Republican Party. I think President Trump came out four times and condemned him and didn't know who he was.
Four?
He didn't know who he was. He didn't condemn him or his ideology.
Well, I condemn his ideology. It has no place in society.
What about the former president?
The president didn't know who he was. And the president
knew Kanye West.
You know what? He's been. So he knew who Kanye West is. He didn't know who Fuentes is. Yes, sir.
So are you following that? He didn't know who Nick Fuentes was, and yet he was allowed to sit at a table with the president of the United States because they don't vet people there. And he's condemned him four times, except he hasn't. Are you following part of this job? It seems to be you've got to be a good bullshitter, Dr. Tracy. This guy's not good at the job.
No, he's not. He's not at all. And he's not good at the quick getaway either, man. He stayed in it. I think that he has to get better handlers. Lord knows that Donald Trump now has to have supervision according to his campaign. He's not allowed to do anything without having somebody there. And same thing goes for Herschel Walker, I hear, that he has to be kept so many feet away from the press now leading up to the final days of that election. So I think that he is not good at it, and he is pandering to people like, as I understand it behind the scenes, to like Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, and I learned it's not flagrant, but fragrant tonight. Fragrant disregard. I didn't know that
did she say
was
that?
Part of it.
Did she say fragrant? Oh, that's beautiful.
Yes.
I got to say, I find the gazpacho Belize to be very fragrant this time of year. Whoa.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to be fun brilliant. Language-wise. I think education in this country should be paramount as part of the platform for the Democratic Party, because we're going to have to teach people how to use words properly. I mean, we really are going to go downhill.
But, you know, it comes back to the whole Biden issue. Like, I say it all the time. Joe Biden's old, right? He's old. He probably needs a nap during the day. He's an 80-year-old guy with a stutter. But he will sit down and take any question in a one-on-one interview. He can do it. He can think on his feet well enough. I mean, what is this culture of babysitters with Trump and now Herschel Walker, who, yeah, they're trying to just restrict him as much as they can until the 6th is over? I mean, you'd think that conservative voters would realize that grown men who need this much supervision might not be the best leaders we need right now.
Exactly. If you need supervision, should you be in charge? I don't think so. And it is disturbing. You know, when we look at these folks who have been in politics for many years, many, many years, it is to me, they are amazing speakers. And even with, I don't care about his stutter. I mean, we mention it. He mentions it. He, you know, it's something that he's proud of overcoming. Also, you know, for sake of conflict of interest, I graduated from the same law school he did. But he's just an extraordinary speaker, and he's not afraid. And you know why? Because he's smart. The guy is smart, and he absolutely knows the issues. He understands what is at stake. He's been doing this a long time. And he's had so many years dealing with the press. He understands the importance of the press and the importance of the press for not only politics, but for the American people and for the country. And he respects them. And you have to answer their questions. You don't treat them like garbage. You don't keep them 20 feet away from you. I worked for the Clinton Gore 96 campaign, and I worked on the advance staff, and I was working with the press folks. And so I got to herd them around. They were a lot of fun. and you have to respect them because you need them.
So here's my next question for you, Doctor. We're having this conversation a few hours away from the beginning of the month of December. Happy end of November, everybody. That means that the Democrats in the House will have exactly 31 days to do something with Donald Trump's tax returns. What do you make of this news? Is it going to be a case of too little, too late?
I don't think so. My understanding is that the Democrats are meeting this evening on that committee that got the tax returns. And the representative that's in charge of it is following the rules, following the law, and they are reviewing it, and they are going to decide how to deal with what they learn. I have thought for the longest time, like if they can pull it off, I would package up everything. And I would send it over to the Senate to be further processed. That's how I would handle it if I were in charge. But I'm not in charge. if you're listening in Washington, please do that so that this stuff can continue, because obviously it's going to be shut down when they get into the next session. But I do think that they can move quickly. They've figured out, especially for the Select Committee, how to break up into subgroups and are working feverishly. And I think that they need to, the biggest issue with those tax returns is, who does he owe money to?
Exactly. Exactly. Who is he? Who has the compromise? I mean, who is paying him? And obviously, I think the other issue is, how much could they ever actually say? I mean, money laundering being what it is, a lot of it's kept off the books. But this brings me to my next question. Merrick Garland, 3D chess playing genius or hiding under his desk?
3D plus chain playing genius. He knows what he's doing. He tends to take a conservative view, and that's because he was a judge. And he knows what he needs to do in order to maintain whatever the ultimate result is for the department. So if it's a conviction, he knows what he needs to do to maintain that. His job was to make decisions about overruling convictions. So right. He knows what needs to happen. And I think that they wanted that information from the January 6th committee earlier on, and the January 6th committee refused to give it over. They're requesting it again, and it's because that investigation is coming to a conclusion, and they're going to pass that stuff on over, and it's going to be made a part of their files, and mm-hmm. it's going to be reviewed. I think that Jack Smith is a good choice, although I do share some of the concerns about, you know, do I have to have my heart broken again? Because the idea that he's going to save us. But and when I look at how long it takes to prosecute war criminals, it takes forever.
Yes,
so
it does.
He's used to the slog, but he didn't allow a delay, and he's right on top of it. And I expect that we're going to see some action, because this is one individual who is dedicated to just this.
Yes. I mean, look, I know a lot of people who had their heart broken by a guy just like Jack Smith named Mueller once upon a time. I'm in the really unpopular camp where I don't care. I don't think Trump's ever going to be president again. And so whatever happens to him with law enforcement is fine, as long as he's not appointing judges. That's my really unpopular take here. I don't think after January 6th, there's a way he could ever be reelected. And so my whole focus is on Ron DeSantis, right? Like, let Trump shuffle the shit around. I think Trump has a lot of value now for Democrats because they can tie the GOP to him while the GOP is trying to move him out the door. Maybe I'm being very naive, but I kind of feel just like, whether he winds up in jail or not, that fight's done. Now it's about Trumpism in this party. And are we going to be focused so much on the figurehead that we're going to lose sight of what the actual army Trump built is doing?
I think that there is an important act of accountability that needs to happen, whatever that is, just yes. because we don't want to set a precedent that this is OK. Because remember, they're using other things to try to set a precedent that certain things are OK. I think that DeSantis very well could be caught up in some of this stuff for all we know. Who knows? He's got his own problems and that are going to be coming down the line, is my understanding. And he is equally as problematic. They both are. They're just different flavors of the same problem.
Thank you.
And, you know, one's stronger, one's a little weaker. And I reversed that diplomatically. But I think that it is important to have accountability when people do things that are wrong. And
yes.
it is something that we clamor for. We clamor for it in our workplaces. We clamor for it in our communities. And gosh darn it, the former president of the United States, who is now a private citizen, ought to be held accountable for his behavior, because otherwise he's sitting in his ritzy little club there where our documents were found all over the place, shoved in places. And I want him held accountable for that, because there are lesser people that have been held accountable for things similar.
No, you're right. You're right. And I want him held accountable, too. I'm not afraid of him becoming president again. That's all I'm saying. Go ahead and hold him accountable all day long. Scare the hell out of people. I think we should. If he's not held accountable, January 6th was just a dress rehearsal. It was just the beer hall putsch waiting for, you know, Kristallnacht to happen. And I'm a big fan of it. I just kind of feel like we have to pay a lot of attention to what the GOP is doing next, because Trump is the past for these people. Let me ask you one more thing, Doctor, before I let you back to your evening. How's your Twitter game going? It's still standing. It hasn't actually caught on fire yet. All my guests, I'm asking them to try to analyze what the hell this man is thinking, because I've never really witnessed a public meltdown like this.
I feel I haven't spent a whole lot of time on Twitter recently. I mean, I'm on there. I like everything that you post, but I post some things myself occasionally. I used to be more prolific with it, because it feels a little bit like the last day of college and we're moving out of the dorms. Like, all the people that I love aren't there really. And I'm getting all these ads for weird stuff, and I don't like it. You know, it used to be companies that I didn't like. Now it's just like weird individuals that are promoting these social beliefs that I don't agree with. So it's uncomfortable being there. I've tried some other services. I'm on Mastodon, and I think that what is going on and why? I mean, you know, Elon just doesn't know what he's doing. He's a good master of puffery, and yes, and that's it. That's all he is. He's a blowhard, and he talks a whole talk, but he can't back it up. He's really, you know, he didn't create Tesla. Other people exactly created Tesla, and so he buys stuff and then he wrecks it. That's what he does.
But I mean, is he just on coke? Like. When I see him saying we're going to have this content moderation board that'll vet every decision before we let anybody back on, and then 3 days later, you know what? No, here's a poll. Where have you got? Let's let Trump back on. Like, he'll come out with these great grandiose pronouncements, and then he has no impulse control, and he'll flip on it 2 days later. I mean, we just found out. This is the guy who kept saying Twitter always has to be apolitical. Now he's saying vote Republican, vote DeSantis. I mean, and now we found out they're no longer going to monitor people who lie about COVID-19 anymore. I don't see how long term this helps Elon get his $8 a head per month from people to pay off his debt. I don't understand the model at play here.
Well, he doesn't have a model. He didn't do an organizational change plan. He didn't do anything the way he should have done it, which I detailed in an open letter to him on my Substack. But he is somebody who needs money. And so the reason why you're seeing all these people getting let back on, and you tie it to the fact that you're also seeing them put out ads, they're paying to promote themselves, and he needs cash coming in. He fired a whole bunch of people. A whole bunch of people quit on him, and because of his flouting of the labor laws. And I think that he is in deep, deep trouble. And now it looks like there may be a backtracking, and the government may want to be looking into that sale. And I don't know. I have to look at it more closely. I don't know what the ramifications of that are. I mean, you know, are you going to reverse the transaction? Is it like a chargeback? I don't know. Who owns Twitter at that point, right?
Exactly. Who will wind up owning this thing in the fire sale a year from now when you see it on the discount rack next to MySpace and Friendster? I mean, the EU is now threatening him with a full ban of Twitter, of the entire app in all of Europe, unless he obeys his own rules on content moderation, because they've had these rules in place for a while, and their commissioner in charge of implementing digital rules told Musk that you have to adhere to, you know, your own checklist of rules. Don't have this arbitrary approach to reinstating banned users. You know, you've got to agree to an extensive independent audit of the platform. I mean, forget Apple. He might have the entire European Union ban his site next year.
You don't screw with Europe. I mean, you don't. They have some real serious rules over there, even when it comes to workplace investigations that we have to follow over here in the U.S. And I will tell you that he is probably, you know, they should say goodbye to Twitter over in Europe. I just don't see it. Wow. It him being able to comply. He's just not capable. The only way that happens is if he steps aside and allows competent people to take over. And I don't see him immediately doing that. But it's the other thing is that he could treat it like a house flip and try to flip it and just eat the loss. But yeah, it's just frustrating.
That's what Uncle Rupert did with MySpace once upon a time. So you're exactly right. Dr. Tracy Pearson, it is always a great pleasure to have you here. Second time. Thank you for trusting us enough to come back into our house of lies and iniquity. What's the best way for our listeners to follow you and keep up with all your work?
Well, I am on Instagram and I'm on Twitter. I'm on Mastodon. You can find me under Tracy Explains. I'm on a couple different servers. I'm on Federated Press and I'm on another one, which is, I think, Newsy Social. But it's Tracy Explains, and you can follow me on LinkedIn as well under Dr.-Tracy.
Brilliant. And I love your Substack, and I am trying to understand Mastodon. Thank you so much for joining us again tonight, Doctor. What a great pleasure. Tracy Pearson, we will be right back with your calls at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Welcome to the love fest that is Tell Me Everything, bringing good trouble to the right-wing bubble. And we are taking your calls on everything from the Tribal Nations Summit the White House held today to New York City Mayor Eric Adams' plan to solve the homeless crisis by forcibly hospitalizing the homeless against their will. We're talking about the Respect for Marriage Act, the great legacy of Christine McVie, Hakeem Jeffries, and new leadership in the Democratic Party. And of course, as always, we're talking about petulant millionaires at birth ruining things that they didn't create in the first place. 866-997-4748 is our number. Want to just play this really quick. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre earlier today in the White House press room. They asked her to address all the union workers who are feeling understandably let down by the Biden administration's pressure to keep them from striking for paid sick leave. Give a listen.
What is the president's message to union workers, rail workers across the country, you know, who backed the president, who helped him get elected, believed that he was standing with them, and who feel that he has betrayed them?
Look, the president, as you know, has been called by union unions and labor leaders as a pro-union president, and he takes that very seriously. He is the most pro-union president in history, and he's worked tirelessly to secure victories for unions and for workers since he was first elected to the Senate. So this is when it comes to labor, when it comes to union, this is something that he has worked towards and making sure that he delivers for what he called yesterday. If you listen to him during his Michigan statement, he said they were the backbone. They build our middle class, right? They were the best workers that we have in this country. And so, as a proud pro-union president, he's reluctant to override the ratifications procedures of individual unions.
And that's why, as proud pro-union supporters, we would like to see this proud pro-union president actually strong-arm the rail industry that had $30 billion in profits after laying off a third of their workforce, so our railway workers can just fucking get paid sick leave during a pandemic, for God's sakes. See, here's the nice thing. I'm not a Democrat. I've never belonged to a political party. But what I like about them is they'll criticize their own. God, they'll throw their own out of office at the drop of a hat. I always say Democrats eject them, Republicans reelect them. Yeah, Democrats will criticize Joe Biden. Liberals will always criticize Joe Biden. You know why? Because it's not a cult. It's not about blind obedience to a ruler. They also ask Karine Jean-Pierre to chime in on the passage of the Respect for Marriage Act. And to those who say it stops just short of the protection from Supreme Court that a lot of folks were originally seeking.
The president last night had a statement praising the Senate for passage of the Respect for Marriage Act. As you know, there are members of the LGBT community who argue that the bill is weak sauce. It doesn't go far enough to protect the rights of same-sex married couples in the event that Obergefell does get struck down. What's the White House's message to those who are concerned that the bill doesn't go far enough?
Look, you saw the president's statement last night. This is a huge step forward. And it is historic that we saw this movement from Congress in a bipartisan way to protect same-sex marriage. And I think, in the time that we're in, when we're talking about the differences between Republicans and Democrats and how we're not able to get things done, we're seeing that right now in an issue, a key issue that matters to this community. Again, it's a step forward. There's still work to be done to get it across the finish line. But I do think, and we do think, it's something to celebrate.
Yep. Keep the pressure on, but celebrate it at the same time. I agree. Look, what has everyone said about Roe v. Wade? Oh, why did the Democrats codify Roe v. Wade into federal law when they had the chance? Well, because they were trying to do other things. When did they have a 60 vote threshold? For what? Maybe 35 days briefly in Obama's first term. They were trying to pass health care and do other things. So now they're codifying marriage equality as a federal right. And people are still mad about it. For God's sakes, people. Keep the pressure on these Democrats all the time, but stop and smell the successes when they happen. We're at 866-997-4748. Y'all been on hold for a very long time. Let's go to the phones. Jeff in L.A., thank you for your patience. Welcome.
Thank you for always speaking about labor, and thank you for taking my call, as you generally do.
Thank you, and thank you.
It's just so important when I hear your voice. It's like, gotcha.
It's amazing how scared the media is of talking about this rail story, isn't it? I mean, I don't think Fox is covering it at all. Most of the major networks aren't covering it for the same reason Ed Schultz got fired from MSNBC for talking about labor issues. They don't like to cover it because they don't want their own people unionizing.
But what's so bizarre? I guess because most of media is unionized.
I don't think so.
No, I thought most of the television and so forth, they're unionized, and even the
news people who work in like cable news, you're talking?
Yeah, I thought like they're in the broadcasters union, no?
Some are, many aren't.
Oh, okay.
I mean, why do you think? This is what I always say. I go to all the parades in New York City, and there's always a lot of media coverage and helicopters. I've never seen a news helicopter at the Labor Day parade. Why do you think the American TV media doesn't cover labor issues at all?
Well, I think that's the problem, is that they don't speak up. And I also ask actors, too. I really wonder, or the NBA or the NFL, why don't they come out to, I mean, if you had, I don't know who, I don't follow sports, so I don't really know. I just follow the union matters.
Okay.
But give me somebody important in sports. If they came out to support a strike, my God, that would be huge. Or George Clooney, who's always, he'll mention labor here and there.
I know.
But that would just be massive.
I know.
And I just think, this labor thing, I think your analysis was just, as usual, head straight right on. And I always think of Biden, and Biden did a lot of the work, the way I read it, under Obama, actually getting things done. And I think your analysis was right on about those two issues, the rail and the marriage equality, which is that he knows he pushes, he's got a union mind, which is good faith. But what I was thinking about with his sick pay is there are a lot of people who can get fired when they're sick, right?
Yes.
I mean, forget even getting it off. So I don't know the terms, and that's the other thing. They always hide these things because it's way too complex to air in 15 minutes, and the American public has very little ability to understand anything. But what I want to differentiate is, I say strike. Get them out there. Get all of those celebrities, all of these people, and let them strike. Let's see what really happens when the rails go down during the holidays. Do it. if we really care. We've always talked about the Democrats are always saying, oh, they, how did we lose the working? I mean, Reagan, who was the president of the Screen Actors Guild, how did we lose the working class? This is how.
Yes.
And I'm not blaming Biden, but I'm saying let him strike.
Well, but again, this but Biden's in a tough spot. Here's the deal. Like, I also appreciate the position Joe Biden's in. You don't want to have a nationwide railway strike when the weather's cold and the holidays are coming up and we're already dealing with a troubled economy and inflation. I mean, you want to stop letting fuel be shipped around the country and food supplies. I mean, our economy would suffer, and working people, the people who would suffer, not the rich, it would be working people who would suffer the most on this. So I empathize with the position Biden's in, but take a step back from all of this. You know, if Joe Biden doesn't give the rail workers what they want, if he pushes this agreement through, well, it's going to hurt him some with his base. They'll still vote for him, because if a Republican president did the same thing, there wouldn't even be negotiations. There wouldn't even be consideration given to the unions. And no one in a Republican base would care at all if a Republican president told a bunch of unions to twist in the wind, because we've seen it happen our whole life. They don't care about working Americans. So, you know, at the end of the day, the Democratic Party, it's the only ride unions have. Like, the Republican Party is the only ride anti-abortionists have. So I still live in hope that they're going to work this out, because paid sick leave is not asking too much.
But what I just get at is it will hurt them, but who's hurting? They're going on strike. I mean, if he's going on strike is like close to going to war. I mean, you're giving up your ability to earn money. You might not get rehired.
It's desperation.
I don't know the Railway Labor Act as well, but my point is, and in England, by the way, I was like crying reading the notes I read. England is about to go on a nationwide strike, and the Labor Party there is trying to do a clampdown on it.
I know.
Mean, there's something called the Norris LaGuardia Act. This would not happen under the NLRA. This is happening under the RLA. So that's why I say let it fly. I mean, even if it hurts, gonna hurt me. I'm not. Well, it's really, but I say we all have to show solidarity, and this could be a moment. This could be a moment. And
yeah, you know, I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it happen.
I don't blame Biden. I think your point is exactly right about Biden, which is that, you know, it is sort of, I mean, if I was had anything to do with negotiations, I would say, look, you know, a lot of Americans don't even have the right to, but that's because they haven't formed unions, and it is so hard. But I died almost twice with a heart attack, and I would do it again because I believe in labor so much.
Don't give yourself a heart attack. We need you. But again, the position Joe Biden's in is what can he do that's going to hurt the least amount of people? And so if I help the railway workers, it could hurt thousands. That's the position he's in. And at the end of the day, there's one thing we can be sure of. Joe Biden and his party are the ones who care. The Republican Party does not. It's messy out there. Jeff, thank you for the call. This is Progress.